A whole gang of media snoopers, including Jonathan Marks, scans from D.C. to daylight every Thursday here on Radio Netherlands. Their super-duper whopper-doppler receiver gizmos pick out the essence of what's happening in the world of international broadcasting. Radio Netherlands, we have the technology.
Hello, this is Jonathan Marks for PCJ Online. Just about to push the button on another program from the media network Vintage Radio Archives.
By shortwave and satellite, this is the Dutch International Service. Now, let's try it this way for a change. This is the Dutch International Service, Radio Netherlands. Media Network, the weekly communications magazine for shortwave listeners. Produced and presented by Jonathan Marks.
Well, hello, and it's nice to be back after some 4 months off the air, at least as Media Network. It's been a welcome break, giving us a chance to sort out some 2,500 tapes that gradually piled up over the years, and the opportunity to transfer our administration for the programme, which includes the background publications like the book list and receiver shopping list, onto a computer. That way, we hope that in the coming weeks we can speed up the way we process media news for this programme. I notice the reaction from the DX Press is that today everyone is expecting a brand new media network. In a way, they're right. Look out for columns like PubSpot and InfoDutch. But our basic philosophy of being a magazine programme about communications hasn't changed. Conditions on the shortwave bands have, though, and not for the best. The all-important sunspots, which help propagation on higher frequencies and reduce congestion further down, have been on the low side. In fact, between October the 1st and 7th this month, observatories reported no sunspots at all being noted. And true to form, most of the new shortwave stations, which said they'd be on the air by September, are still yet to be heard. But some developments aren't so obvious. Here in Europe, the 49-metre band has had a reputation in German-speaking areas for the traveller. Although not so popular now, a decade ago you could quite easily find car radios with the 5.9 to 6.2 megahertz portion on them. Stations like Radio Luxembourg and RIAS Berlin used it, and still do, to expand their audience beyond their normal FM and medium wave coverage. In Austria a few decades ago, the mountains in the west of the country prevented adequate reception of VHF FM signals. The technical solution at that time was a 10-kilowatt shortwave transmitter at Aldrans in Tyrol. It's still widely heard in Central Europe on the frequency of 6 megahertz exactly. But now there are to be some changes, as David Hermges of ORF's English section now explains.
Hitherto, this antenna has been used for relaying the domestic service of Radio Tyrol. But as from the 4th of November, we shall be feeding it with our own international programme. That's 6 megahertz for Austria, from 05 to 23 hours UTC every day.
So in 10 days, this service will probably disappear from shortwave forever.
Das nächste Mal, an dem gesungen und gespielt über Öregional von Radio Tirol Kim.
And it'll be replaced by ORF's shortwave service. The FM coverage in Tyrol is now adequate, it seems. At the end of the year, the shortwave transmitter at Aldrans is due to be dismantled, along with a medium wave transmitter at the same place. A spare 50-kilowatt shortwave transmitter will then take over from the existing main shortwave transmitter site, that's at Musbrunn, south of Vienna, and that's to keep the 6 megahertz channel in operation. But only for a temporary period. The plan is to transport the old Aldrans 10-kilowatt shortwave transmitter across the country to Musbrunn, where it will operate at least until 1987. Well, now let's bring in John Campbell again with the clandestine column.
I'm glad to have the opportunity to talk to you again, because there's certainly plenty going on in the clandestine and pirate radio business these days. Most of the interesting things haven't been happening on the shortwave bands, but they ought to be of interest to shortwave listeners anyway, either as curiosities or because they may be early indicators of trends in some countries that have got chances of spilling over onto shortwave eventually. Just as I was about to start this item, the August issue of the New Zealand DX Times arrived here, and it carries a piece of news that ought to convince anyone that you can never guess where pirate broadcasting is going to turn up next. This news item is that Tonga, in the Pacific, has got its first television service, a pirate service. Official Tongan television has only got as far as being the subject of an Australian feasibility study, but there are plenty of video recorders on the island already. And that's where the pirate company has stepped in, by setting up a transmitter with a range of about 50 kilometres that's already running tests. It seems from the news report that there isn't even any Tongan law that can be used to close the station down, or at least to close the station down quickly. Well, there may not be any pirate radio on the air from Tonga itself yet, but one of my favourite European homebrew irregulars that pop up from time to time around 1615 kilohertz is Radio Tonga Tonga. Maybe the operator uses the double-barreled name just in case the listener doesn't get it right the first time. He tells me that he's got a great admiration for the Kingdom of Tonga, which is why he uses the name at all. The best time to catch the station tends to be around 22 to 23 hours UTC at weekends, and the location is, well, somewhere in the Benelux countries.
That's nice and vague. But far more specific was a new law passed on July the 16th in Britain. It's called the Telecommunications Act, partly designed to update a previous act of 1949. This puts far stiffer penalties on the operators of illegal transmitting equipment, most of it in the FM band these days. So what have been the consequences? One of Media Network's correspondents in London, Roger Tidy, is in a studio there now. So, Roger, what's been the effect?
Well, it's quite surprising, really. I think a lot of people, including myself, expected there to be a big clampdown against the pirates, but that's just not happened. Of course, a few of them have been raided by the authorities, and some have closed down, but most of them just seem to have carried on regardless. So there's still plenty of stations around, and new stations, especially ethnic ones, seem to be opening all the time. All of which is bad news for the authorities, but good news for the listeners, because, you know, a lot of these stations have become really popular with their audience.
But what's meant by community radio?
Well, the concept of community radio is a difficult one to pin down. The thing is, the Home Office, that's the body that issues licences in Britain, the Home Office is believed to be considering issuing community licences in the near future. So now everyone wants to jump onto the bandwagon and call themselves a community station. Sometimes community means what I suppose most people would take it to mean. That is, a small geographical area, such as a town or part of a big city, and there are several stations broadcasting to communities like these. We have a few of them here in London, and there are some in other parts of the country. Anyway, some of these are pretty well established by now and make no attempt to hide where they're transmitting from. Sometimes they have their own marketing operation, selling such things as T-shirts and so on. At least one station even operates its own shop.
It's goodies galore at the Skyline shop in South Norwood. The Skyline T-shirts, printed blue and white at only £2.75, and Skyline keyrings, metal at 60 pence, and leather at only 30p. While you're there, say hello to the one and only Nick Miller, radio superstar and self-confessed genius.
Skyline Radio and the other stations intend to survive with a little help, and perhaps pressure, from their friends.
For very nearly a year, Skyline Radio has been providing South East London's only community radio service. We shall do our best to continue to do so, but in return we ask you to register your support for us by writing to your local Member of Parliament or to the Home Office Minister for Radio, Douglas Hurd.
But Roger, the big growth area is surely in the various language groups in the British capital.
That's right, ethnic radio has been the big growth area during the past year. The Greeks started the trend with a station called London Greek Radio, LGR, broadcasting entirely in Greek to the Greek Cypriot community here. Now there are at least three Greek stations operating here. Their main fare is Greek music, but they also do plays, and even, would you believe, a live Sunday service from a Greek Orthodox church. And, of course, they broadcast advertisements. Plenty of those, in fact.
PAT Freight. Θέλετε να στείλετε κάτι στην Κύπρο? Έχουμε καθημερινές αποστολές αεροπορικός και εβδομαδιαίες με containers επίπλων και προσωπικών ειδών. Μπορούμε να τα παραλάβουμε από οπουδήποτε στην Αγγλία.
Apart from the Greeks, there are several Turkish stations on the air at the moment, plus at least one Arab station.
FM 105 üzerinden yayın yapan Türk Cemaat Radyosu'nu dinliyorsunuz.
The latest community to get its own radio is the Asian community. They call their station Asian People's Radio, or APR for short. I had a chat with one of the station's founders recently, and I asked him what they're trying to achieve.
Asian People's Radio is a very newly set up radio station, and we aim basically to serve all our Asian community's needs, which we have felt so far were not represented by existing radio stations. Asian People's Radio has been on the air for roughly 2.5 months now.
And what sort of response have you got so far from the Asian community?
Judging from the number of letters we're getting every day and, of course, the number of phone calls, I would say the response is very good and increasing day by day.
Some people might say that the existence of ethnic stations like a Greek radio station we have here in London, various Turkish stations and an Arabic station, and now, of course, your own Asian People's Radio, they might say that this is socially divisive, that programmes for the ethnic minorities are better done by the BBC and by the existing independent radio stations. What would your remarks be about that?
Well, I don't think that's entirely true, Roger, because I have felt from speaking to many people, many of my friends and influential members in the Asian community, that there was a specific lack of broadcasting hours devoted to Asian people. And this is why we felt that we would be able to bridge that specific gap.
Didn't he think, though, there's a danger that ethnic stations might get involved in political disputes, for example, differences between the Sikhs and other Indians, which led to trouble this year?
Far from the truth. I think we aim to harmonise all different sectors of the Asian community. And if we can do that, then I personally believe that we have succeeded in our major aim.
But some pirates have been broadcasting a political message, haven't they?
That's true, Jonathan. A station called Sheffield Peace Radio has been getting quite a bit of publicity recently. They're a left-wing station supporting unilateral nuclear disarmament and the withdrawal of British troops from Ireland. Well, although they only broadcast for 2 hours a week, they've attracted a lot of attention from the authorities, and they allege this is because of their politics. They say the leader of the team that raided that station told them they had made a big mistake by calling their station a peace radio, and that they were raided on instructions from London. Generally, though, pirate stations in Britain steer clear of politics.
So most pirate stations are mainly playing music?
That's right. Traditionally, most pirates have been music stations. Today, there are several stations specialising in specific kinds of music, and sometimes the borderline between these and ethnic radio is a bit blurred. For example, the reggae stations, Dread Broadcasting Corporation and Radio Grooves, draw their audience mainly from the black community. Although, as they broadcast in English, they are more accessible to the wider community than, say, the Greek or Turkish stations.
But do they want to become legal?
Well, as I said earlier, the Home Office is believed to be considering issuing licences to a number of community stations soon, although they're very vague about this at the moment. Some of the pirate operators, such as Asian People's Radio, are pretty optimistic about the future.
We are trying to build up a very wide listener base before we would like to go to the Home Office, and then we can demonstrate to them that, yes, there is a need for a legalised Asian community radio station.
Well, that remains to be seen, but I think it's pretty certain that many of the existing pirates will continue broadcasting as before. I think sounds like these will be around for a long time to come.
No way!
Horizon Radio 102.5
FM stereo.
Thank you very much. This part of the program is brought to you courtesy of Mr. Super Cool 1984, the beauty contest for men.
Well, that's ruled me out for a start. In fact, Horizon Radio may already be history. On Thursday, the 11th of October, 15 members of the British Department of Trade and Industry successfully raided the studios and transmitters, seizing £20,000 worth of equipment. The following day, Skyline Radio, LWR and JFM were also raided. Horizon has now reappeared under the name of Radio Solar this week, and JFM and Skyline have also obviously purchased new transmitters. And so, life goes on. But as one of our other reporters, Roger Tate, explains, the British media have been working on other stories.
Well, Jonathan, here in London, pirate TV has been major news recently, and all of the national TV stations and newspapers have been closely following the activities of Channel 36. This is the brainchild of a group of electronics enthusiasts, calling themselves WaveU. They claim to have developed a new type of low-power TV transmitter, which they hope to sell to small communities, particularly in the United States. Jim Young explained how the project started.
Well, it all basically started from when we designed the low-power television transmitter, which was aimed at the American market. We applied to the Department of Trade and Industry for a license to further test and develop it. And it was, in fact, the Department of Trade and Industry that labelled us as being TV pirates. So we thought, fine, you know, if that's what they're going to call us, that's what we'll be.
And turning towards this new piece of equipment, what's so special about the technology that you're using on this transmitter?
What's made it so special is the fact that it's a lot smaller than the nearest competitor and an awful lot cheaper. I think I'm correct in saying that the nearest competitor we've got is around about £100,000 and the size of a fairly large saloon car. And we've managed to get it down into the size of a suitcase to retail in the United States for approximately £8,000.
So WaveU claim that they have a unique invention and set out to publicly demonstrate its potential, telling the press that they do not intend to set up a pirate TV station. The media, however, have decided otherwise and would appear to have overreacted to the story. American, Italian, Spanish and Australian film crews all descended upon a small house in a South London suburb. At the press conference was Trevor Jay. He's a freelance writer and was asked by WaveU to arrange some international publicity.
Originally, we were approached by one of the American companies that had somehow found out what we were doing. And really, I just sort of followed up by making a few calls to the major network news stations in the States. And it literally took off from there. Actually had the TASS news agency down as well.
Would you say that the press have overreacted to the story? They've branded you TV pirates. Have they ignored the reasons behind the test transmission?
I think it works out half and half. Some are just there because it's pirates, so that is the big story, and they want to be there to see the pirates called or whatever. The local press in London have actually got the right angle for it. What we're actually doing, if we're allowed to do what we want to do, it would create jobs in that part of London.
So, Jonathan, the press here in the UK and abroad seem to have been suffering from pirate fever.
But what about the transmitter? Has it been worth the stunt?
Well, as for the invention itself, we'll just have to wait and see if it gets official approval. But either way, it has certainly given a group of electronics enthusiasts an international reputation.
Media Network's PubSpot.
And by pub, of course, we mean publications. We now receive more and more media-related publications than ever before each month, and a number of clippings from correspondents and listeners. The aim here will be to filter out the interesting items and draw attention to feature articles which we feel you should know about. The first one isn't so much an article, more a news brief from the August 27th edition of Aviation Week and Space Technology. Two US aerospace companies are conducting a technical feasibility study for the Voice of America on alternatives to land-based shortwave broadcasting towards Eastern Europe. Some of these include a nuclear-powered broadcast satellite or high-altitude balloons. It's already been calculated that if you want to broadcast on shortwave from a satellite, you'll either need massive reflectors of between 300 and 500 metres in diameter, or alternatives such as long wire antennas. Frequencies in the 11-metre shortwave band would be best suited to such a scheme, if launched, since the antennas don't have to be so large as, say, on 49 metres, and interference levels from terrestrial transmitters are much less. This is especially during low sunspot activity, like we're going through for the next 4 or 5 years. Perhaps you smile at such a concept, but whether related or not, it's curious that the Soviet Union has just registered, with the International Frequency Registration Board in Geneva, quite a few new frequencies in the 11-metre band, 25 megahertz. And this is just during a period when everyone else is giving up 25 and even 21 megahertz for long-distance broadcasting because signals are too weak and unreliable. Meanwhile, a recent edition of New Scientist reports that the BBC has perfected a studio-to-transmitter system to reduce the costs of introducing stereo television dramatically. Using a system called Sound in Sync, many European television organisations already send their sound round the country as a coded part of the television signal. The BBC has found a way to squeeze more audio information into the video signal, and hence give enough room for stereo. But Britain is not too pleased with the Australian decision to use a system called BMAC instead of CMAC that the UK wants to use for direct broadcast satellites of the future. Both systems are much better than existing colour TV standards such as CCAM, PAL or NTSC. But BMAC and CMAC mean a different design in transmitter receiver in the home. Like many standards, there are always at least two incompatible ones. And this decision has cast further doubt on the future of direct satellite broadcasting in Europe, since no country can afford to go it alone. But now, back to shortwave.
Yankee Oscar 7, Kilo Alpha Juliet, contest. Yankee Oscar 7, Kilo Alpha Juliet, contest.
Right, that sort of sound effect you can hear quite easily on the amateur radio bands quite often these days. CQ contest. With me is Cor Flesbom, one of the organisers of a rather special event this coming weekend. What are you going to do?
We will be very busy with a group of 30 Dutch radio amateurs participating in the CQ Worldwide DX contest. We have a special place for it. It's in the northern part of the country, in Friesland. We will have our six transmitters there on the different radio amateur bands and participating in this worldwide contest, trying to get as many points as possible.
How do you get points?
By working many stations in many different countries in many different parts of the world.
So, and how is it the furthest station, the more points you get?
When I'm working with a station in Indonesia, I get 1 point for working the station, 1 point for working a new country, the first station in Indonesia, and another point for working Oceania. And so I have a multiplier of 2, and it gives together 3 points.
Quite a lot of mathematics. What's actually the conversation that you have? You must, of course, be very quick.
It's a very short kind of conversation. It's when you hear us working, it looks very unpolite talking to each other as we do, but we should work as many stations as possible.
Right. Why have you chosen Friesland?
The conditions working in Friesland are very good. First of all, we are able to make a kind of antenna system which is excellent to work DX work. And next to it, we have the pleasure of having no neighbors at all, so we can't get any quarrels about transmitting in their TV or radio sets.
How far away are you from the nearest neighbors then?
Approximately 3 or 4 kilometers away.
That's quite unique for Holland. You say six transmitters. Are they only going to be working on one part of the band or what?
All the radio amateur bands for the DX we are using, that's the 10-meter, the 15-meters, 20-meter band, the 40-meter band, the 80-meter band and the 160-meter band, and especially the DX frequencies, the DX channels on those frequencies we'll use.
And you've also got a special call sign.
Yes, we got from the Dutch authorities the special call sign Peter Abel 6 Whiskey Whiskey, or Peter Abel 6 Worldwide. And we think there will be a lot of interest by radio amateurs outside Holland to work us and to get a QSL card from this special call.
Have you done this sort of thing before?
Yes, we have been participating 3 years ago, and then we managed to be, it was another contest, we were using CW, the Morse, and we were the first group from Europe ending in that contest.
Now, I know many people have got access to a SSB, a single sideband shortwave receiver. You'll need that if you're going to listen out this weekend.
Yes, just for the listeners, you have to be able to receive the single sideband modulation.
Right, best of success.
Thank you very much.
And you could look for PA6WW starting at 0000 hours this Saturday morning until the start of Monday morning, 0000 hours, a period of 48 hours. Shortwave listener reports should go via Box 330 in Arnhem, the Netherlands. Our colleagues at Radio Australia are also taking an active part in the CQDX Worldwide Contest. Their media programme, Talkback, is also celebrating its first anniversary this weekend, for which our congratulations. And during that special programme, they'll be doing a slow-scan television experiment. You can hear this at 16:10 UTC on Saturday and on Sunday at the following times, 0210, 0530, 0810, 1210 and 2110 UTC. As for the coming propagation conditions, this was the forecast available from American sources at 0730 UTC today.
This is the Space Environment Services Center, Boulder, Colorado. Solar terrestrial indices for 24 October 84 follow. Solar flux 72. An estimated A index 33. Repeat. Solar flux 72. An estimated A index 33. The Boulder K index at 0600 UT on 25 October was 5. Repeat 5. Solar terrestrial conditions for the last 24 hours follow. Solar activity was very low. The geomagnetic field was at minor storm levels. The forecast for the next 24 hours follow. Solar activity will be very low. The geomagnetic field will be active.
News has just been announced this morning that Radio Netherlands' new transmitter station on the Flevopolder will make its first modulation test on air tomorrow, Friday. It's quite a brief one, and more extensive tests will be announced in next week's Media Network. Right. Tomorrow, Friday, October 26th, three transmitters, each of 500 kilowatts, will test in the direction of the Caribbean. This will be between 16:30 and 17:23 UTC only. The frequencies are 21.595, 17.605 and 15.560 kilohertz. Instructions as to how you can help us evaluate the tests will be announced during that test transmission. The time again was 16:30 until 17:23 UTC on 21.595, 17.605 and 15.560 kHz. Now with news of some tests that you won't be hearing, here's Victor Gunatilaka reporting from Sri Lanka.
With winter in the northern hemisphere approaching very fast, DXs in Europe and North America will be looking anxiously to see whether they could catch one of those odd test transmissions from the Voice of the Maldives. But unfortunately, I have bad news for those people, because the Voice of Maldives informs that their shortwave transmitter on 4754 kHz broke down completely earlier this year while it was being tested, and there is absolutely no chance of reviving this old transmitter. So it looks certainly bad for the very near future of hearing anything on shortwave from the Voice of the Maldives. However, if you are a medium wave fan, you might try 1458 kHz with English from 1230 to 1330 UTC, with an English broadcast that's English from 12:30 to 13:30, and English news is at 1300 UTC. Contrary to 1984 World Radio TV Handbook, the station signs off daily at 1735 UTC and not at 1700 on some days as listed. The frequency once again, 1458 kilohertz. We have been having some very good daytime reception, Jonathan, especially on 31 meter band, and Radio Thailand has been heard with their English broadcast from 0500 to 0600 on 9650 kilohertz, 9650, and although they were announcing 11905 kilohertz, 11905, we were unable to trace this transmitter due to interference on the frequency. At 0600, the station signed off after a lengthy English station announcement and schedule details, and followed by the national anthem.
Thanks, Victor. More radio planned for next week. In the meantime, this is Jonathan Marks in Hilversum, saying back soon. Bye for now.
Contributions to Media Network, Box 222, Hilversum, the Netherlands.
And that's where we end this nostalgic trip back into the Media Network audio archives from 1981 to October 2000. If you find all this stuff interesting, you might want to explore the Critical Distance website, where you can find more vintage audio shows, but also peruse recent video interviews I've made in the course of my travels around the world. Some of the videos actually follow up on points raised in the Media Network programme. So zip over to www.jonathanmarks.com for more details. In the meantime, this is Jonathan Marks saying back soon. Bye for now.